This time I'd like to call the House Resource Committee to order. Today's date is April 13th. The time is 9:17. Welcome, members. We do have Representative Guttenberg, Edgman, Olson, Co-Chair Johnson, Tuck, Kawasaki, Seaton, Wilson, and Co-Chair Newman, my friend Peggy Wilson. We've got some more work today on CS for Senate Bill 305 Resources /M. We'll continue our work on that. We did receive some amendments. I received them last night about 10:30 for today's 9:00 meeting. And the House is, or the Chair is going to decide that I'm not going to accept any more amendments on this. So we will work with the bill that we've got and see what we can do. We still have the Finance Committee that we can go through to try and do some more work there if we need to, but we've got a couple of days left. So if they're good ideas, let's get them up to the finance members and see if we can get them milled out there too. They're working their calendar with us and in a coordinated effort to try and make things happen if this goes, and then we'll get her on the floor and see what happens to it. It'll be a good discussion. Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You have two amendments that were that have my name on them. Those are the amendments that I had talked to the other co-chair about previous to our meetings the other day. These are conceptual amendments that are in line with the bill that we have before us. We have a bill that is only a working document that we has been proposed to roll in a amendment. We had talked about the appropriateness of looking at those issues. We accepted it as a working document, to have a working document. And these are amendments, I believe, properly offered in this committee by a member of the committee. So I will.
I believe your staff delivered into my office about 10:30 last night, Representative Seaton. And the chair has ruled that we're not going to take any more amendments. They didn't get out to the other members. They didn't get out to the members of the public, you know, so that we could get them posted and get them out there. They weren't delivered till 10:30 last night for a 9:00 today meeting.
Oh, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The procedure in Mason's and in uniform rules is that amendments can be offered by any committee member at the time that the committee is meeting on the bill. This is the bill that we have before us. This is a, as I say, that these were amendments that were conceptually talked about with the co-chairs, not only the other co-chair, but yourself as well, yesterday. And they're now in form that I'm offering them, will offer them before the committee.
Take brief eddies. We do have a 24-hour rule on amendments. Conceptual amendments, when we generally think of conceptual amendments, it says we're going through a working document, we're working through it, we wordsmith a little bit, we change things. I believe that the amendments that Representative Seaton had up had to deal with taking out point of production and removing per barrel equivalent, which quite frankly I think should happen in the future, but they are substantial. They're substantial the way taxes are paid today and how they're evaluated. Those are substantial amendments, not small amendments. Is that correct? Is that a fairly substantial amendment, do you think, Representative Seaton?
Mr. Chairman, there is a draft amendment that was requested and is M-1 and WA-7, which were, I believe, delivered to your office. These conceptual amendments are that same provision in another form, because we have now adopted version M. They were dual.
We haven't adopted anything.
We adopted them. We adopted them.
We are in version M.
We adopted as a working document, I believe, is that correct?
Yes.
I think we're still under discussion.
Representative Kawasaki, where are we?
We adopted, there was no objection.
Yeah, there was no objection.
Okay.
Representative Seaton?
Yes. If you would like to go to Mason's or Uniform Rules and see whether I have the ability to offer an amendment during a committee meeting, I'm perfectly willing to take a break and bring Mason's in and see if there's a 24-hour rule in there.
We have.
Issue that we have before us is an issue that's covered by Uniform Rules and covered by Mason's, and any committee member has a perfect right in a committee meeting to offer an amendment that is not dilatory, and these are exactly as you described them. They are significant policy issues on the working document that we've adopted, and we adopted a working document because there was an amendment, and we wanted to see how it would roll into the major bill.
Yeah, and we also have a policy, and the policy rules are established and delivered to everybody's office at the beginning of each year. And Representative Olson had brought up an issue before. The chair had made it very clear that the 24-hour rule is going to be recognized for major amendments. You just said these were a fairly major policy change. We made that very clear in an earlier meeting, according to the rules that are sent out, the committee rules on amendments and how the committee operates, as far as that goes with the 24-hour rule, to make sure that it's adequate time for the chairs, the other members, to have the ability to examine amendments, to ask legal, to ask our advisors as to what they mean. And, you know, there's always explanations by members of what they feel it means, but it's also the prerogative of the chairs and the other members to decide on their own of what they mean. And if they do not have the ability for due diligence to go out there and look and examine what they mean, how they affect the bill, then they will not be accepted. We went through that. It was very clear.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, the amendments that you have before you are the point of the discussion that we have had. We've had come forward an amendment that got rolled into a CS that was talking about, should we use point of production or should we use barrel of oil equivalent as the determining factor for allocating costs? That's the exact point of this amendment, which is, has been our, mostly our entire discussion is based on the tax implications of point of production or barrel of oil equivalent. This is not a new concept that is brought in at all to the discussion. This is clarifying the amendment that we, or the work draft that we have before us, specifically on the points that have been discussed at every single meeting that we have had. We have Mr. Logston's presentation from previously that had two sets of columns. One was based on point of production value, and the other set was based on barrel of oil equivalent value. The most of the discussion was based on the barrel of oil equivalent value, which gave us a very put the state in a very detrimental position if we went forward with the bill on that basis. The point of this amendment is to take the presentation that was made by Mr. Logston and select the criteria for point of production. And so that's what the amendments are. They're totally relevant to the bill that we have at hand. They're totally relevant to the conversations we've had on these issues. So,
well, you know what, Representative Seaton, I will find out for myself, and with that, I will take a brief at ease. Representative Seaton went up and talked to the rules chair. Mason's manual applies to the floor. That's the floor doctrine. The Resource Committee rules that were put out earlier in the year apply to the committee, where it clearly states amendment committee substitutes need to be delivered to the committee, to either Deborah Higgins or staff, to Representative Johnson or Representative Johnson and I, for 24 hours prior to scheduled hearing. Out of courtesy, for the last time, because we went through this here recently on major amendments, and we discussed that at pretty good length. I think nobody ever came up to me and said, well, Representative Newmer, Mark, you know, if we've got something major, we'll get to them. After we had that discussion last time, everybody seemed to be okay with that. You know, obviously, our job in the committee process is a process, it's a discovery process, where you learn to make things better all the time. That's our job. And we will always abide to that the best that we can. What we will do is allow you to offer your amendments, but I want to limit testimony on this and discussion on it. Try and hold it to 2 minutes to get the gist of what you want to try and do, and then we'll see where we're at. Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I believe that the co-chair had requested amendments from two proposals from the department to come forward with presentation, and they may precede mine. I was not offering
these
amendments.
I don't believe anybody is offering any amendments besides you, Representative Seaton.
I have no amendments, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, I'd offer conceptual amendment number one.
Check.
We have, which amendment is that?
That would be
point of production?
No, that's the one that says the provisions of this bill that decouple the production tax treatment of oil and gas are limited to the production tax treatment of oil and gas that are produced north of 68 degrees north latitude, and the changes would include the sections of the bill that contain that.
That worked well, because then you just read your amendment across. You want to speak to your amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This amendment is meant to help us implement the bill if it passes out this way. The section that we have of 320 only relates to gas that is produced on the North Slope. So if we change our entire tax calculation mode of decoupling for all across the state, we are going to cause significant administrative and tax burden and tax changes to the producers, as well as to the administration Department of Revenue. And since the 320 provision, which is what we're trying to apply to, that is the exemption only in Section B, only applied to production taxes that are levied on North Slope gas shipped through firm transportation capacity, this amendment will make sure that we cause the industry the least harm and the least problems in calculating their taxes, and we'll ensure that the amendment does what it is intended to do, and that is talk about North Slope Gas at the start of open season.
Well, Representative Seaton, my first blush on this is the fact that because taxes are calculated monthly, where heavier expenditures and oil and gas is produced, is calculated monthly. So it would appear to me and the people that I believe I've talked to, because that's not the first time I've thought of this question and this issue. You know, what happens to industry there? And because they are calculated monthly, they can still take deductions, whether it's done on a day, on whatever day it is, they still take your gross and your expenditures to get to your net, and that's pay your taxes once a month. They don't pay your taxes every day. If they pay tax every day, it might be an issue, I think. But because it's done monthly, and also what this does is because it's for north 68 degrees, 68 degrees north, it was always a hope, and I believe the department spent a considerable amount of money this year trying to evaluate how much gas is in Cook Inlet. Gubik, I believe, is just a little south of 68 degrees. Is that north? Or any wells that are south of 68 degrees, you know, for exploration that may happen? Nenana? Doyen's doing some stuff at Nenana. That would be probably affected by this because it's south of that latitude range. So I just think that this could cause issues down the line, that if you start limiting, now you have just gases that are north of a line and south of a line that are treated different. So that's my first concept. Representative Johnson, did you have comments? I thought you had a comment.
I'm ready to vote.
Mr. Chairman, and wrap up.
Thank
you. Mr. Chairman, the entire purpose for this bill is the AGEA provisions. The AGEA provisions that we've had before us, and we've read, that's 4390-320, specifically only apply to North Slope Gas. That's the absolute definition in there, and the definition of North Slope Gas is gas produced north of 68 degrees. So we are talking about a bill that we are wanting to make changes to and change the way taxes are calculated, and we are going to apply that all the way across the state, whether it's in this bill for a limited period of time. We're going to make all of those calculations change instead of targeting the gas that we're talking about and reducing the impact on the all the producers as well as the department. I think we recall that there were seven buckets that were talked about by Mr. Logsdon's presentation, and this would eliminate the need to redo taxes on about five of those buckets. So it would only talk about that gas produced north of 68 degrees, which is the entire purpose of the bill for the AGEA document.
Okay. I thought there was Representative Wilson.
Since this is amendment is partially to help the department do their figuring a little bit easier, Marcia has mentioned to me that she has got something that she thinks it would help us all understand this a little bit better, and could we have her come up and just tell about that so that it might make a difference on how I vote.
Chairman Johnson, through the chair, or Chairman Newman, excuse me, through the chair. The description I have is the basic understanding of how the current bill works and how the other version that it's moving away from works, so that it gives the basic understanding of those two concepts. What I have won't directly address the North Slope Amendment itself, so I defer to the chair if, you know, how you want to...
You don't have an opinion on this amendment?
On the North Slope Amendment, we've just seen it. Certainly, we could make it work. It does have a certain mitigation aspect of limiting the decoupling effects to the area of concern, which is the when we go into a major gas sale, then that's primarily the area. So, you know, we would certainly agree with Representative Seaton that that's the concept here. And because it's a conceptual amendment, you know, a lot would depend on how you work out the details.
That's the problem with conceptual amendments, huh? It's how you work out the details.
Mm-hmm.
So, Marcia, would this, if Doyon is drilling in Nenana area and they strike large volumes of gas, how would this affect them?
Well, if it's a conceptual amendment that we decouple north only at this point, then Doyon would have the benefit of being able to have expenditures that are associated with their production under the current law, which means that they would get credits, and then being a small producer until such time as they actually produce, they would have credits that they could sell to other producers, et cetera. So I don't think this amendment would impact them negatively.
Or partners of Doyon?
I don't know who those partners are.
Or anything in possible Cook Inlet?
Cook Inlet, they would be free because the decoupling wouldn't impact them. They would basically Middle Earth, what I call Middle Earth, which is not North Slope and not Cook Inlet, and Cook Inlet would not have the impediment to the flow of their expenditures, et cetera.
So this would be based on regulations yet to be written.
Well, it would first depend on having Mr. Bullock line out how you draft decoupling for North Slope, and then we would pass regulations that would implement that law that you would pass.
I guess we just don't know yet for sure.
But
right.
I thank Representative Wilson for the invitation to explain it, and certainly, but that's, I want to be very clear, it wouldn't be explaining this specific amendment, but the underlying W version and the underlying M version.
Okay. Thank you, Marcia.
I'll maintain my objection. I'd like to call the question.
Clerk, call the roll.
Mr. Chairman, if I might, I believe that technically this would be amendment number 3 to this whole bill. We've been at it for a long time. I tried to count up. I think that this would be technically number 3 to the bill. We've already adopted 2 other amendments, I think.
It would work.
Number 3.
Yeah, Co-Chair Johnson, that'll work because we're starting a new day here, so
right. Okay.
It's got new dates on them. Clerk, call the roll.
So we're calling roll on conceptual amendment 3. Which was put in by Representative Seaton as conceptual amendment 1. Clarify for my notes. Okay. Representative Seaton?
Yes.
Representative Edgman is absent. Representative Guttenberg?
Yes.
Representative Kawasaki?
Yes.
Representative Tuck?
Yes.
Representative Wilson?
No.
Representative Olson?
No.
Co-Chair Johnson?
No.
Co-Chair Newman?
No.
4 yay and 4 nay.
Any other committee discussion? Representative Tuck?
Yeah, Mr. Chair. I dropped off a couple of amendments last week on Wednesday, and we've added new versions since then. So on Sunday, I added those same conceptual amendments, but just changed because the line numbers are different now. And I would like to move that amendment.
I object, and I don't think I have it. So I'd like
do
to
we
also
do we have those amendments?
I'm not sure. I may have it, Mr. Chairman, but I just don't know.
Looks like this. It's to the W version, right? We're in W?
No, we're in M.
Oh, we're in M.
Yeah, let's have a brief ideas.
Yes, I move amendment number, is it four?
This would be amendment number four, and object Johnson, four, Tuck, object Johnson, and for the record, for people who were not here, maybe didn't hear the clerk, amendment number three, Seaton did fail. Please explain your amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We've had presentations with the Department of Revenue and with Logsdon Associates calculating the cost allocation of the price of gas, I mean, sorry, but the cost allocation for gas determination. Two methods. One of them is point of production. The other one is barrel of oil equivalent. When we look at the graphs that was given to us from the Department of Revenue, one of the concerns of the bill sponsor is that we're going in a disadvantaged bargaining position if we have to change the gas portion sometime down the road. And that was one of the main purposes of wanting to decouple. And if you look on the slide two of the Logsdon and Associates' April 9, 2010 chart, we can see that although the revenues for the state of Alaska,
which chart are you on?
I'm sorry, page two of Logsdon and Associates presentation, and it actually says SB 350. That's how you can keep the two apart from each other. One says 305.
305.
350.
April 10th.
April 10th. Yeah, April 9th. I'm sorry, April 9th.
I think is it would that be the same one as April 10th? I believe it just added. And April 10th just had the yellow chart added to the end of it.
Oh, possibly.
And maybe fix the number on the front.
April 10th, I think it was the one barrel, two barrel presentation.
Okay, what page are you on?
And the reason why I use this one is because it's the Department of Revenues and it's all encompassed in one.
Representative Tuck, I want to see where we're at here.
Okay.
So which, what does it look like? Okay. Go ahead. Does everybody understand what's going on?
What page?
Page two.
It's all the same.
And Mr. Chair, if everybody's there.
Go ahead.
The scenario that's been presented by Logsdon and Associates shows the $120 barrel and $8 gas. And if you look at the differences between a barrel of oil equivalent and the point of production, one of the concerns is that for this bill sponsor, one of them is that we have a total lost revenue of oil and gas put together. And the other thing is, and the concern from the Department of Revenue is that we're not going to be able to go in to negotiations if there has to be any changes at all with although that underneath the decoupling, we would be still collecting more revenue for the state of Alaska. The gas proportion is significantly lower. As a matter of fact, I think it's a third lower than it would be if we just went on a barrel of oil equivalent. The question about whether to couple or decouple, I think really needs to come down to the gas portion of the cost allocation. And determining that on a point of production versus barrel of equivalent puts us more with the status quo in going into the gas cost allocation. So to protect the last.
In what way?
Pardon me?
In what way?
If you look at the chart on page two there, if you compare, just look at the barrel of oil equivalent. If you look at decoupling, we see that separating gas is 0.3 billion. If we do the status quo, it's 1.2 billion. However, if you look at the next chart to the right of that, at the point of production, if we go ahead and decouple, we're still able to maintain our gas cost allocation to 0.8 billion. So it just gives us a little bit more bargaining strength, which is the concern. If we go ahead and adopt this decoupling bill when we go into negotiations.
Well, I'll speak there, Representative Tuck. What it does, when the BTU equivalency was put in there, is a purpose of trying to measure the value of gas. And they estimate about 6 million BTUs per barrel, you know. But what it does not do is it recognizes that there's different gases. You know, that was for methane. So in fields where, like in Prudhoe Bay, where there's natural gas liquids, lots of propanes, butanes, ethanes, it increases the BTU value. So that changes. So it changes the point of production value. So if you change the BTU value, you have to be able to adjust the value at the point of production because the value of the gas is different. So if you take out that portion of it, how do you measure that?
Well, the point of production is going to be a simpler, easier way of determining that. It's not going to be determining the value, the BTU value of one gas compared to another gas, but it's just all production that's coming out. And we've seen two scenarios done by Logsdon on determining one way and determining the other way. I prefer to see the point of production way. It allows us to make sure that we have the higher cost allocation for gas. And if we ever decide to decouple, I mean, if we do decide to decouple, it protects our best interest.
Representative Tuck, how would it affect, see, the problem is with the BTU equivalent is, again, I'll point to a field like Gubik. You know, and we're realizing we're trying to fill up 4.5B pipeline. That's a big pipeline. And so when you have your deductions and such like that, your BTUs, nobody would drill, I don't think, nobody would drill like at a Gubik where it's just a methane because the value of that BTU is lower, where you've got higher value gases otherwise too. And so that's why it's determined. You have to determine the actual value of the product. And if you take away the ability to determine the value of a product, how do you tax it? Did you just say, doesn't matter if it's a Cadillac or a Volkswagen? I mean, it's the value of the product, isn't it? I mean, so if you take away the measurement of the BTU, which is kind of a common thing, I don't like it. I think that next year we really need to take a look at that. But it's a pretty complex issue, and it's kind of what they did, trying to pull this together. And I've had many discussions with our advisors on this issue, and my rationale on why I don't like it. But I think they're trying to get a value of something because the BTU values changes. And it just changes out of each well, depends how much gas is coming out of that well, what types of gases are coming out of that well, how they're using it, and comparing it to the oil at the point of production. So to take the actual value of that for the tax, for the state to figure out the taxes on that, and if you take away one of those numbers, how do you get there? Then it just treats them all the same.
Yeah, that's a very good question, Mr. Chair. The Logsdon Associates said that there's many different ways of determining the relationship between oil and gas. We happen to be looking at two right here, but he said there's many different ways of doing so. I appreciate your question. I don't have the answer for that, but I'd be more than happy to have Department of Revenue try to answer because I'd like to know also.
Yeah, staff to Representative Crawford and I went over this the other night for a while. It was a good discussion, and it kind of kept going into, well, but what if this?
Is it possible that the Department of Revenue answered that question for us?
Come on, Sam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for the record.
So what was the question, Representative Tuck?
You asked the question. I was just saying that was a good question.
Okay, Commissioner, if you separate BTU values from point of production, how do you get actual value of gas?
Mr. Chair, my understanding of the amendment that's been offered doesn't have anything to do with establishing the value for the purposes of taxation other than in the allocation of costs between oil and gas in order to then derive a production tax value. The opportunity to either use a volume-based measurement, you use the proportion of the volume of product. In that case, you use a BTU value so that you do properly use a volume of hotter gas.
Actual value.
The actual heat value in order to establish the volume equivalence, and you use the proportion of that to divide your costs and establish what the profit is, or, as the amendment suggests, you look at the value of the two streams. You look at the point of production value of the oil, the point of production value of the gas, and you take the proportion of each and take the total costs and divide them based on that proportion. Either way is a legitimate way. Either way will get you to a production tax value from which you then derive your tax. As Representative Tuck indicated, the analysis that we have done and provided here, and we also have additional stuff that we thought this issue might come up today that has been submitted to the committee, that describes the choice between a BOE cost allocation versus a point of production cost allocation. And the point of production cost allocation will result in a higher gas production tax that's locked in. It will also result in a lower overall tax. It will likely be calculated as a result of this because the oil will be brought down in terms of its profitability because more costs will be moving to the oil if you use a point of production as opposed to a barrel of oil equivalent or heat value.
Until the point where production in taps goes down enough where the value in gas goes up, and that's where you run into me. What do you currently use now to evaluate gas, Commissioner? Do you use both?
Currently in our regs, we have both systems.
So you currently use both? And Marcia Davis is shaking her head yes, too, just
right.
For the record.
We have either one, and it depends
and you
on
do
the
that,
context.
I'm assuming that you came up with that calculation because you felt it's the best way for the state to get the value and the most accurate and credible information that you can for revenue for taxation purposes and for setting that value.
For the context in which it was needed, we chose the allocation method that best met that particular purpose.
That's just what I said.
And so you need to choose one for this particular purpose.
Okay. Any questions? Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And you know, we don't seem to often, but I agree with you on the value basis. And I just wanted to make sure that point of production is a value. It's not a heat content. We're actually talking about calculating what people will pay for that gas, whether it's wet gas or dry gas. That is all taken into context so that when we're looking at point of production, that's the actual value associated with that gas and what it will basically sell for. Is that correct? So that the heat value and how much liquids are in it and all that is all taken into account to determine the point of production value?
That's correct. To determine the point of production value, you do not use a conversion of heat value in order to convert that to volumes. You just take the value that they sold for in the market.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
So if you take away the BTU out of there, how do you measure the value of it?
Because you just, the total sales.
You just say, okay, just so many cubic feet of gas and there's no value, it's all valued the same?
It's the total sales of
the wholesale
stream.
Cost.
Less transportation costs.
But it's not the way you do it now.
I'm sorry?
Not the way you do it now.
No, that's how we do it now. Actually, it's how we do the attributed gas tax under the status quo, is by point of production value. The only time we use BOE is when we're talking about cook inlet gas. We use BOE in order to separate your oil from your gas within a particular field of cook inlet, in order to be able to compare that to ACEs for purposes of the lower of.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Actually, this is a question for you, because I don't know the procedure for something like this. I'm just asking. This amendment does the same thing, I think, as the amendment that Rep. Seaton has, his other amendment. And we've been able to look at these amendments, and so it appears to me that this one might give a little more flexibility to the department over the other one, and I don't know if we can even...
Well, therein lies the reason why we like to have a little bit of time to look at them, Representative Wilson.
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm saying. Are you going to allow a discussion to look at the two amendments that do the same thing to... I don't know if we can even do that. I don't know how that
what?
Works.
I guess you're going to have to figure out in a discussion on what you think we mean. If you got questions, ask the commissioner, and we'll keep on talking.
Okay.
Representative Johnson.
I'm prepared to call the question, Mr. Richard.
I do have a question. Then.
Hey, Representative Wilson.
Okay. I guess then I'll ask the question to the commissioner.
If you want, I can bring Marcia up. If
both okay, of that would be fine.
I didn't ask her to
come. Chicken.
Is it okay? Sure.
Is this your lifeline?
Circumstances.
This is your last lifeline, Commissioner. We're limited.
I tend to look at
Davis,
things.
Marcia Davis, I believe.
Yes, Marcia Davis, Deputy Commissioner, Department of Revenue. I tend to look at these things more simplistically because I don't have the same economic manipulation skills and machination comprehension. So, if with your indulgence, Chairman Newman. The debate here is how do you get at value better, and Chairman Newman's been talking about how can you do that without considering the BTU, and that's obviously a very valid question, because people think of value, they think of BTUs, how much potency is in that hydrocarbon, and that's how the market tends to look and evaluate value. What the amendment does here, though, is gets right at the heart of value. And by going to the gross value at the point of production, you couldn't be any closer to how the market values that product than that measure. Because this was my basic primer, you basically take your sales proceeds, what the marketplace paid for that, you take away the transportation cost, and what you're left with is a term called gross value at point of production. That is your best indicator of what the value of that product is. And so what we're doing with what we're not, but what this amendment proposes to do is that when you think about how to allocate expenditures and costs, you can choose to do it on a lot of ways, but one of the ways that is being balanced here is if the producers are going to spend money, they're going to spend money because of how much they're going to get for it, the oil and gas. And the best indicator what you're going to get for that oil and gas is going to be what people paid for it. And that's what the gross value at the point of production gives you, is that benchmark. What did people pay for that product? And that's the idea, is we would use this as our measure for how to allocate the lease expenditures.
Marcia?
Mm-hmm.
What do people value it on? What's the value in that?
Well,
what makes
one
it
of
value?
The values, absolutely, one of the values is BTU, but there are other values, like did it get to my marketplace, West Coast versus Gulf Coast? Did it have sulfur? Did it, what density was it? Because what's interesting is sometimes factories and machinery is set up to deal with, now it is, set up with high sulfur. So they might actually pay more for high sulfur when they can no longer get it. So it's weird. The marketplace is weird, but at the end of the day, the best measure of what the value is what someone actually paid for.
How would this affect propane shipments to... because it's a higher value BTU, how could that possibly affect
it gets captured.
When that is going to Fairbanks and stuff?
Right. It gets captured because the marketplace will value that stream, and if there's good propane in there, they'll pay a price, and I'll see that in the gross proceeds.
Takes the stream out of the gas.
And they'll take it out, and then what goes downstream from that point on, I'll see the price for that too, and I'll
how
know what
that
value is.
How would the value, and I'll just ask one more question, and I'll go. How would the value of that gas in, because if you do that, and you're taking that propane, those BTUs, out of there, which would lower the BTUs that would be shipped to AECO.
That's right. That's correct.
Would lower the value of that gas shipped to AECO.
That's correct.
Make it harder to maybe have a successful open season, or because they're counting on the value of those BTUs to amortize their costs?
Well, for this purpose, though, I'd just be looking at what did the marketplace pay for that volume of gas, and I'll be able to add up the sales prices.
Thank you. Representative Tuck?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One of the things I want to just overall state is that this May 1st issue isn't necessarily an issue. What we're trying to do right now is define the portion of combined tax and that portion that comes from gas. And that's what we're going to be going into in this first open season, is determining what that gas allocation is going to be. And we've seen the sponsor talk about decoupling, and then we've talked about status quo. And the department has given us a PowerPoint presentation earlier that's showing whether you have it under a barrel of oil equivalency or you have it point of production, the numbers stay the same pretty much through status quo, if I'm correct in saying so. They're pretty equivalent.
Doesn't matter.
What's equivalent?
If we're status quo, whether we determine by barrel of oil equivalent or if we do it through point of production. However, if we decouple, there is a significant difference in the gas cost allocation. And in preserving what the sponsor intention was, is to make sure the state of Alaska isn't going to lose revenue, because we can change, we can decouple, we can change anything later on, but we're getting locked into the gas cost allocation of as of 320 going in 10 years. So this puts us in a better position, which I think is what the sponsor of the bill would like to see, because again, all we're doing is determine the gas cost allocation and moving forward. So I guess the question to the Department of Revenue is this a simple method of determining the gas allocation? Fairly simple, straightforward, easy for everyone to understand?
Representative Tuck, yes, it would be, and also maybe getting to a question that Representative Wilson was getting at. The language that you have submitted as far as this amendment actually provides good direction to the department in saying that to the extent possible we would use this, but doesn't mandate it in circumstances where it may not make sense when we actually get into looking at it more closely. And so I think that is a good balance of a clear mandate so that the industry knows that it's going to be primarily based on this, but doesn't lock us in if it turns out to not make sense in a particular instance. And Mr. Sheriff,
that little word shall on page on line 9, that makes the difference if you didn't notice that.
And I just, from a technical matter, this language substitutes for existing language in section 21 of version M. There's similar language in section 22 that would need to be replaced as well. Section 21 deals with cost allocation. Section 22 deals with adjustments to cost allocation. And it's on, yeah, section 22, it's probably on page 32. I'm not sure what the
those wonderful are. Unintended consequences that we call this.
And it's just making sure that the amendment is clear.
And I think the amendment does speak to it, page 31, lines 19 through 22.
Right, but it needs to be on page 32, line 1 through line 6.
Commissioner, did you write this amendment, or did you assist in this?
No, we're looking at it for the first time today.
This is the first time you've seen it?
Yes.
So maybe I won't even go there.
But we're very familiar with this type of amendment because it's been something that's been discussed by committee members for the last week. And I think that we've seen other versions floating around.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, and we talked about this again all last week, and that was the purpose for Representative Johnson to ask the Department of Revenue, when we're going to the one bucket, two bucket versions, to do two versions, one showing the barrel of oil equivalency and one of point of production. Understand that we're not going to see those amendments But that was the purpose of doing that, was is the comparison. If we leave everything status quo, doesn't matter. But if we decide to decouple, it does change the gas cost allocation for the state of Alaska in determining that, and I would like to see us do it under a point of production, because that brings us more status quo. So it's kind of a win-win situation. We decided to decouple, but yet still protect the gas cost allocation determination.
Commissioner, if it didn't say shall in there, that was removed. And just assume that. How much gas do we produce today? Very little gas, I'm assuming. Just run a few compressor stations.
Are you talking about statewide? Or are you talking about?
Yeah, no, because this doesn't affect Cook Inlet. This is 368 degrees. This is North Slope.
Well, it could affect 320. Cook Inlet.
How much gas do we produce in the North Slope? Very little.
Well,
maybe can't say that.
And I don't mean to parse its words, but in terms of if you mean produced for the purpose of sale, yes, yeah. Little in comparison to the total volume that's actually brought out of the ground and sent back down.
Okay. So if you did that, and because we produce a small amount of gas and a large amount of oil, if you didn't have the word shall in there, how would it affect 320?
Mr. Chair, I believe the intent of the bill sponsor is for
not
this
the intent,
law.
What would it do?
It would result in when gas is produced for sale, there would be a significant difference in the way cost allocation would take place, which would result in a significant different tax burden on the taxpayer.
Would it result in a significant tax burden on the taxpayer?
Significantly different, depending upon if there is no expectation of what the department's regulations may use for cost allocation, the potential tax burden would vary significantly depending upon what the department chooses to use. This tells the department that from the legislature's perspective that you want us to use a particular cost allocation method so that the window of potential deviation by the regulations will be much narrower than if it was left undirected.
And the commissioner, the point I was trying to make is when we do this, it could have significant differences in there, just in something like this and with one word. That's the point I was trying to make, because the amount of gas we make today, that's the effect that this could have.
That's the effect of this law has significant impacts on the state's revenue and needs to be considered very carefully. Yes, I agree.
This does for 2 days. This makes it, we won't go there.
It locks it in for potentially 10 years, Mr. Chair. It's not a two-day thing. It's a two-day gimmick to lock something in for 10 years.
Representative Tuck?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And are you referring to the shall to the extent possible allocate? On the conceptual amendment, are you talking about a shall statement somewhere else? I'm sorry, I'm just trying to follow. Because on the amendment, we're just replacing shall consider allocating lease expenditures in proportion to BTU equivalent barrels of oil to shall to the extent possible allocate lease expenditures in proportion to the gross value at the point of production. So it's in the language is in the bill right now. All we're doing is converting it from BTU to point of production.
Mr. Representative Tuck, I'm just trying to make a point. We spent months on this, you know, trying to figure this out before, and that's the system that we came up with because we thought it was the most fair for the state, and to just take it out with an amendment. That is just appropriate.
Mr. Chair, just to be clear, there is no statutory direction for a cost allocation previously. The legislature has not dealt with that issue previously because it is not a necessary part of a combined tax system.
BTU.
I'm sorry?
When we came up with BTU equivalent per barrel.
But that was for a completely different purpose than for cost allocation. It had to do with a methodology for how to compare gas streams to oil streams for the purposes of determining the tax value. That's a different purpose than what is being described here.
Do we have any other questions?
One last question. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Last time we met, I asked a question about comparing the revenue from when we were under a PPT program to potential revenue losses that we have by the status quo. Isn't it safe to say that we would still be in a better position now, even though we have the higher revenue stream coming in from the ACES, than we would, even if we keep the status quo, because we are going to lose some revenue through status quo, if we never decouple, but we're still in a better position than we would have been had we done that, had we kept the PPT program?
Is that towards the amendment?
Well, it just, my point is that what we're trying to do is protect Alaska's best interest, and I think we are protecting Alaska's interest whether if we keep status quo. What I'm trying to do with this amendment is to keep it as status quo as possible while still decoupling.
Was there, Representative Tucker? Could you re-ask the question then?
Yeah. In comparing to the PPT that was before ACES, if we keep everything status quo, isn't the state of Alaska still collecting more revenues than we would have been under PPT? Are we safe? Are we not losing the revenues that's been so feared in decoupling? I mean, we are going to be losing some revenues, but it would never be as much revenues as we would have lost if we would have continued with PPT.
Representative Tuck, through the chair, the answer is yes. And as a result of your question the other day, we did run the analysis, and we have copies of it here for the whole committee if they want it. And what we did find was that in all the different price relationships between oil and gas, that the status quo brings in significantly more revenue than under PPT, that in most, many instances, particularly when the allocation, the parity relationship is wide, that the increase from PPT to ACES is much smaller than the increase from status quo to decoupled. In other words, this is a much higher tax increase. When you look at the, if you took PPT and you decoupled PPT based upon either a BOE or a point of production value, you actually end up at a place similar to the status quo combined. And so I think you're correct in saying that even with the cost allocation that you're proposing, if you compare it back to PPT, we're basically in the same place with the status quo without going to this decoupled cost allocated world.
Okay. And Mr. Speaker, or Mr. Chair, I saw the bill sponsor here. Can we have him speak on the amendment? It's his bill. I think it would help clarify things for all of us and what the intent of the bill sponsor is, since I was trying
well,
to assume.
Well, you know, I guess if he wants to come up and speak, he can.
Call it at ease.
Let's maybe see what his intentions were. I don't know where he's going headed or what's going on. We'll take a brief at ease. Welcome, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, I've been watching from my office, and
what do you think?
Anyway, I'll
don't go there.
You know, I'm very intrigued by, I guess, announcing for the record, Joe Pascvan, Senator from Fairbanks. And I was very intrigued by the comments of Representative Tuck on the potential for a win-win situation to move this bill from this committee. And with decoupling with point of production, I have no problem with that. In other words, I think that it gives, it accommodates the interests of protecting the state at the top line, and it accommodates the interests of protecting the state in the formation of a obligation. It's just a number when we know that negotiations will later occur. So I think from that standpoint, I do not have any objection to that double win.
Any questions for Senator? Thank you, Senator.
Thank you.
Any more questions?
Call a question.
Clerk, please call the roll, and this would be on amendment number 4 by Tuck.
We have an objection.
Is there an objection?
Oh, I actually objected. I'll remove my objection. That'd be easier.
I will maintain my objection.
Okay.
And then I'll speak to the Senator Y later. Because I ran through this.
Yeah.
Call the poll.
So we are voting on conceptual amendment 4?
Yes.
Conceptual amendment 4. Representative Edgman is absent. Representative Guttenberg?
Yes.
Representative Kawasaki?
Yes.
Representative Tuck?
Yes.
Representative Olson?
No.
Representative Seaton?
Yes.
Representative Wilson?
Yes.
Co-Chair Johnson?
No.
Co-Chair Newman?
No.
5 yay, 3 nay.
Amendment number 4 by Representative Tuck has passed. Any further community discussion? Did we, Representative Seaton?
Mr. Chairman, there were some charts that were kind of shown, one slide or other, I believe. Have those been introduced to the committee? And can we get those introduced? I don't need a presentation, but I'd like to.
Representative Seaton, are you asking to go through a whole bunch more charts and information in a long? I mean, that could take a lot of time.
Mr. Chairman,
look at, and we, I think that they were passed out so that you could have them, you know, to look at to try and make determinations on this. But I don't believe that they've been introduced to the committee. I know that when Senator Passavant had started to look at them a little bit, and so we said, asked them to get to the committee and where they're at in the public, but we know we haven't formally brought them up and said that we want to look at that information. I don't believe.
Mr. Chairman, if I might, I believe those are charts that the commissioner had for his presentation that he's not making. If you want to talk to him after the meeting and get those, I think that would be appropriate, but they have not been introduced or used other than his presentation materials, so they haven't been introduced, or I haven't seen anything like them. So if you want to ask him after the meeting to provide them to you for future, that would be more than appropriate. But they have not been used in this committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Guttenberg.
Thank you. The charts were in my packet today, but it appears that they're mostly dealing with POP versus BOE. And I would just like to ask the commissioner just briefly if we took care of this issue with that amendment, how relevant is it still?
Mr. Could you restate the commissioner, please introduce yourself and then restate it, Representative Guttenberg?
Yeah, it's my impression that you are going to be preparing two different amendments, which aren't going to be introduced, but with Representative Tuck's amendment, I'm wondering how relevant these are to that or that took care of the issue.
Representative Guttenberg, through the chair. To the extent that we would be doing any economic analysis on the bill, given Representative Tuck's amendment, we would use the point of production cost methodology to run our economics based upon that amendment.
Right. So you had prepared, although they're not here, but the sensitivity on going POP or BOE has pretty much been taken care of with that amendment, as far as giving you direction.
Correct.
Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Is there any, I'll take a little bit of time to make sure we have any public testimony opportunities. Is there anybody online? Is there anybody in the audience or signed up? Nobody signed up. Hearing and seeing none, public testimony is closed. We'll go back to committee discussion. Is there any more further committee discussion? Representative Tuck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think that we've determined that this really isn't, again, a May 1st issue, that the legislature has the authority to be able to decouple at any time. There's no urgency to do this now. The draft regulations that the Department of Revenue has put together is basically defining the portion of combined tax that comes from gas. Any decoupling that takes place after open season, that's locked into because of 320 and has no effect on what the state of Alaska can bring in for oil. I like having it coupled together, and here's the reason why, is we are offering an incentive to get gas on a pipeline. I think Alaskans would like to see a gas line. Now, will the state of Alaska be receiving less revenue? Yes, potentially, if we want to never decouple. But we have that opportunity to do that at any time. And the gas producers are going to be able to take the lowest of the gas cost allocation method under 320, or if we change gas taxes sometime in the future and it happens to be lower, they're able to take the lower of the two. All we're doing is setting a ceiling that the producers will ever have to pay in going with a gas line for the state of Alaska. This only gives a tax break if the gas prices are extremely low, if there's a huge parity. If they're closer together, it's a moot point. If we have a situation where gas prices are so low that a pipeline isn't necessary or going to happen, then this whole thing is unnecessary, this whole discussion that we're having. This is for determining the gas cost allocation at the time of our first open season and merely that. Anything down the future, the legislature can go ahead and change. So I just want to make that very clear that I do support having incentives in place to allow the producers to be able to get their gas down a gas pipeline.
Good. I'm glad you'll support the governor's bill when it comes on the floor. Just on that point, too, is there any other comments? I'll make a final comment. It's because, to the inverse of what Representative Tuck said, it's because the person's gas production tax obligation, the tax obligation calculated under the gas production tax that's in effect on the day that it starts. That's where it's at. Doesn't matter before, doesn't matter after, on the day it starts. Where is it at then? What's the value of that? Well, we saw what the value of that was. It was artificially inflated up because of the calculations of the oil and price of oil. It wasn't accurate. It wasn't an accurate reading, in my opinion. So do I think that we need to make sure that the state is secure to protect its interests? Yes. Do we have the ability to go back and change things after that? Yes. Do we have the ability to negotiate? Yes. Should we? Yes. Should we make sure that we have a good environment for industry to thrive? Absolutely. Because it's not looking good, folks. Trans-Alaska Pipeline's going down. Hopefully we'll get some gas moving, but I want that value of that gas worth something to this date. You know, so to decouple it for a couple of days, does that hurt the state in a way? I don't think so. So that's why I really support this bill. And with that, I believe we are done with committee discussion. And everybody else can add. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I would move CS for Senate Bill number 305, Resources as amended, with attached physical notes and individual committee recommendations.
Objection. We have objection by motion by Representative Johnson, objection by Representative Guttenberg. Was that right? Want to speak to it?
Sure. It's my belief that neither is the bill necessary nor ready to move. I think there's more work to be done on it. I know there's other reasons to getting it out of committee, but I think in my conversations with the finance chair earlier in the year, and he might have changed his opinion. I'll give him that. We all have that. We've spent weeks on this bill. Senate Finance Resources spent weeks on this bill. We're shipping it up to a committee that has the pretty much the rest of the burden of the legislative session to learn this issue, to understand decoupling, to understand the nature of the things that are in all the amendments that we did, and the terms, and all the presentation that we've had before us, all the modeling that's been done. I just don't think there's time. So that is the gist of my objection. We know that the timing is not an issue. Simply the whether or not the structure in place is that important on May 1st or not.
Thank you, Representative Cutler.
Is an issue. Then we just have to decide that whether we want to whether this committee wants to move a bill out that's simply not ready or complete. That's the basis of my.
Representative Olson.
On that point, I recall the co-chair of finance saying last night that if he got the bill today, he would have time to vet it properly. So I think it's imperative that we get it over to him today if it's the will of the committee.
Thank you, Representative Olson. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think this committee has done good work, and I think we have laid the groundwork for the finance chairs and the finance members. And in my conversations with both members, they're watching this very closely. They are the beneficiary of our work. They will take the body of our work forward. Some of the things, you know, just from talking to them, they like some of the things they say they don't, and that's the process that we have. It is important that we move this bill up. I wish it weren't date sensitive, but it is. But I think this committee's done good work. We've made substantial changes to the original bill. We've had substantial debate. I'd like to go back and add up the hours. But I think it's time for this bill to find a new home, and I think it's time to vote.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have reservations to some of the things in this bill that I still think need to be worked on. However, I think the amendment that we put on today, in the long run, has made it so that we have less loss to the state than would have happened before. And part of that reason is because oil is still king in Alaska, and we need more of it. And I think that this bill now is still got some more incentive for looking for oil and having more exploration happen. So I think we've done a good thing here. Is it perfect? No, unfortunately it is not, but I think it's because of the short session and everything, it's time to send it.
Thank you, Representative.
Question?
Question has been, motion for the question has been made. Clerk, call the roll. And this will be to move the House CS version /M.
As amended?
As amended. As the motion's already been made.
Yeah.
Representative Guttenberg?
No.
Representative Kawasaki?
Yes.
Representative Tuck?
No.
Representative Olson?
Yes.
Representative Wilson?
Yes.
Representative Seaton?
Yes.
Representative Edgemond?
Yes.
Co-Chair Johnson?
Yes.
Co-Chair Newman?
Yes.
7 yeas, 2 nays.
And with that, we will recess to the call of the chair.